Farmers today are facing rising costs, volatile markets, and extreme weather. The A Better Way to Farm podcast digs into strategies to help you take control of farm inputs and maximize profit so your farm can thrive for generations. Remember to take advantage of our free resources at abetterwaytofarm.com. Now, from America's heartland, here's your host. Welcome back to the Better Way to Farm podcast, where we spend each and every day providing solutions to growers to grow better crops and to make more money. We have a fun episode today, one that I was looking forward to doing. You know, we generally kind of hang around the world of corn and soybeans. We relate it to a lot of the crops and a lot of the growers that we work with. But this next guest that we have on for today's episode is from Chamberlain, South Dakota. He's a grower. He's an agronomist. And the cool thing is he's a CCA. It's kind of near and dear to my heart being a CCA as well. It's always fun to work with somebody that came from the retail side and is starting to do this as well, because generally the people that we're working with are strictly growers. They don't have a background in co-op agronomy, so to speak. And this grower does, which I'm super, super excited to get his thoughts on wheat production and how he's been able to be successful with the A Better Way to Farm team and the A Better Way to Farm program that we run. So let's welcome to the episode, Scott. Scott, how are you doing, man? Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Tyler.
I always bring this up, and you know right where I'm going to head, right out of the gate, I got to bring up the certified crop advisor. It's always interesting to me, once I found out that as you became a certified crop advisor and you got your specific number, it was in numerical order. It started at one, and it's worked its way up. I have no idea. The last one I've seen, I think, is in the 500,000. So there's, you know, over 500,000 of us that have that certification. And the cool thing is, I've never seen anybody that's been super close to my number numerically, but you and I have the first three digits of our CCA certification number are identical. So, which means we were able to, I don't know how it worked out, but we passed our test the exact same day. Obviously in different locations, unless you were in Iowa when you took yours. But yeah, that's always something that I like to find out, because our good buddy Preston got his a few years after I got mine. So my number is actually lower than his, even though he's older than me. And that's something that I always hold over him. And it's cool. And so with that being said, my number is actually lower than yours as well by just like 100 and some. So I have had my certification longer than you as well, Scott. So take that.
Yeah, you passed quicker.
Yeah, I don't know about that. We've already talked about this, and this rant is going to probably take up too much time, and nobody ultimately cares, because we're here to talk about wheat, not talk about me. But because I get to run the microphone, we're going to talk about me. My first instructor, he was one of my reps that I worked with, and he was on the board, and he's like, man, you just go there, you just take it. And it's two exams, the state and the international. I mean, if you can pass it, pass it. But if you fail it, it's no problem. And, you know, you just know what you've got on there. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's perfect, because I'm not much of a studier. I was always one that would just show up, take the test and move on. And I learned a valuable lesson. So if Jim is listening to this, Jim, I love you, brother, and I appreciate your thoughts. My suggestion is to anybody that wants to become a certified crop advisor, maybe study a little bit before you take the test. Don't just show up and fail it the first time like I did. So now I have to digress. Let's get back to wheat. I did mention that you've done some time in the co-op system, so I'm going to pull from that a little bit. But you are a farmer. You did some custom acres, and being in South Dakota, South Dakota, I mean, they even have the South Dakota Wheat Growers Association. You know, they have a very large platform for growing wheat. And that's where, when we reached out to growers like yourself, the people that we're working with, hey, do you have any podcast ideas? You jumped on there right away and you said, hey, let's talk about wheat. And then Rod does what Rod does, and he said, yeah, let's talk about wheat. So you're going to talk with Tyler about wheat, and I'm going to stay out of it. How's about you tell us a little bit about kind of who you are, where you're from, because this is kind of the first time you've joined us on this podcast.
So I'm right here in central South Dakota, along the Missouri River on the east side. We're kind of primarily winter wheat, but there is some spring wheat in our area that's raised. So I'm going to look at kind of both things.
Do you want to talk about your background just a little bit, if that's all right?
Yep. Went through tech school and a four-year university, getting my degree in agronomy. I've worked for a co-op for a few years, and before coming back home to farm full time. So I've had that experience along with raising, you know, growing up with wheat in our own farm operation.
Now, you'll understand this as well. You've been a part of the team. Well, I should ask you, so how long have you been a part of the team? Because I always forget, because you were kind of a part of it.
I've been using a lot of the products for going on almost 10 years now, doing a lot of foliar feeding and things like that. As far as part of the team and pursuing more into the business side of it, just started this winter. So,
yep. So you're an old name and a new face. Heard a lot about you, and yeah, you know, it's just until recently you started kind of showing up to more of the meetings and doing some more of that stuff as well. We do talk a lot about corn and soybeans. You know, we talk about our fastball, and you know, being a bunch of Iowa boys, that was kind of the fastball. But we work with growers all across the United States and different forages, different rotational crops, whether it's winter wheat, spring wheat, canola, barley, cotton, sugar beets, alfalfa. There's a grower that I know in northeast, northwest North Dakota, by Scott's Bluffs, it's growing mint. You know, so we have growers that, you know, we don't necessarily just work with corn and soybeans. And that's why I was excited when Rod's like, hey, Scott brought up talking about wheat, you know, let's talk about it. And I said, absolutely, because there are a lot of growers that listen to this podcast and they're like, man, all you got to do is talk about how great everything is on corn and soybeans. What were you kind of doing, or what would you even recommend on the retail side for a grower that came in and said, hey, I'd like to grow some wheat? And I don't know, would you have the discussion? Are you looking more for winter wheat or spring wheat? Or what did those conversations look like?
Yeah. So like I said, typically in our area, it'd be winter wheat. A typical program would be applying your, whether it's urea or a little bit of UAN, but primarily urea out front, if that's in the fall, a lot of it done in the fall or the spring. And then you're going to come back with your typical herbicide and maybe a half rate of fungicide at early 3 to 4 leaf. And then you'll come back usually with some kind of head scab protection later on, right at heading, early heading. And that's kind of the typical program. And that's what we ran with too. You know, we got to a point where, like everybody, we're trying to chase the yields or push yields a little bit and introducing some foliar feeding. And there's several different, you know, it used to be common practice for guys to go out with straight 28% and, you know, and burn, fry the wheat, but it'll grow out of it. But it, you know, and that was a way to get some later season nitrogen on. But since then, there's products that have come out where, you know, we can safely apply a nitrogen, you know, a foliar applied nitrogen and not hurt the crop.
Going back to one of the things that you mentioned was trying to increase yield ultimately, because we do have a lot of growers that are like, man, you know, I grow wheat because it works. You know, I can think of my guys in kind of the Oklahoma, Texas area, even Kansas and kind of around Colorado and kind of back up into the Montana and the Dakotas and stuff. It almost seems like sometimes I always joke in Iowa about soybeans being the redheaded stepchild, that people are just using soybeans in the rotation to get to the next corn crop. And I feel like some guys will treat their wheat that way and they'll say, you know I got to put wheat down because it's about the only thing that grows here for me. And they try to do some things because you mentioned increasing your yield. What do you say to that grower that's kind of trying to maybe shoestring wheat yield along just to kind of, you know, I don't want to put a bunch of money. I don't want to invest a bunch of money into a wheat crop that I'm not going to get that return out of. Where do you kind of see, and we'll talk about some of the other benefits you've seen using our system, but what are the benefits you see or that you can confidently go, not only as a grower yourself, you know how this system works on your operation, but to those growers that are listening, they're like, man, you know, I don't know, this guy's talking about, you know, increase in yield on wheat, but I grow 25 bushel wheat, you know, and that's all I can grow.
I had some experience in Western South Dakota also, where we, you know, the county yields were in the low 30s T yields. So, you know, some things we saw is a lot of times guys will just try to push the nitrogen. Then we run into lodging issues and things like that. So a lot of times, like we talk about, nitrogen might not be our limiting factor. And that's where your soil samples, your tissue samples, will probably identify something that you just weren't seeing or thinking of. So we can kind of get away from putting a whole lot of high-priced nitrogen out front. You got to have something out there, obviously, but there might be something else we're missing that we can put the money towards and push that yield a little bit without having to have that large upfront fertilizer cost.
So what were some of those things that you were missing out on when you took the soil tests and you kind of jumped all in with the Better Way to Farm team and our program? What did you start to see, or what were some of those eye-opening things that you're like, holy smokes, instead of putting more nitrogen on, maybe I can pull back a little bit on my nitrogen and, do something else. What were those other things?
So some things that I was doing was using a our nitrogen product that has a little bit of boron in foliar feeding, and then also a copper. I was short on copper, so that was, and you got to follow within directions there. And the like I said, the nice thing about our soil sample or tissue sample is it's very specific on what you need to apply, say in within safe guidelines. And really, by kind of trying to address those. Little 4 ounces of copper is what it called for in one particular case, but that made a world of difference and really saw some outstanding yield benefit that was far exceeded the county, the T yields. So
So what, and I don't know if you want to share, do you want to share a percentage of yield increase or anything like that? I mean, I don't want to, if you're not comfortable sharing some of that stuff, you don't have to, but what were kind of some of the expectations? Because again, you've been growing wheat a while and you've been making recommendations on wheat, how to grow wheat for a while, being in the, the retail ag sector.
yeah, and I mean, I think it's pretty easy to see a 10 to 20%, or if you're in a it's like increase just on doing some foliar feeding, or if you look out at some places where you might really be tight on your nutrients, you could see 100% increase, be the doubling your yield. And it sounds amazing, but it's easily possible.
Well, and when you're I told a grower that he's like, dude, I'd just be happy with 30 bushel wheat. And I said, dude, we're not going to worry about 30 bushel wheat. We're going to shoot for 100 bushel wheat. And he just starts laughing. He's like, man, you are insane. That's not going to happen. I said, okay, how's about 70 bushel wheat? And then we'll work from there. And he goes, okay, we can do that. Because in our system, you just put a yield goal in there, right? And then it'll spit out. From that soil test, it'll spit out the recommendations, based off of yield goal and crop type and all that fun stuff. And you absolutely can. I mean, we get it that a large portion of your fertility program is carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. And if we don't get enough, especially hydrogen and oxygen, if we don't get enough water, that's where, that's a pretty big limiting factor right there. But to see growth like that is absolutely unreal. I know that Lorna Fidler's story. We've told it several times here, and she's even talked about it, where that foliar application of that nitrogen, and that is a proprietary product. There's nothing on the market like it, that they picked up 15 bushels, basically went from non-believers of the system to some of the, I actually think they're the largest purchasers right now out of anybody.
And that's in a kind of an intensive management area, or a higher management area than what we would be out here out west here.
Oh, for sure. That's 110, 120 plus bushel wheat area out in northeast Missouri. How would you relate this to a typical program that you've been kind of used to? I'm still going to call it an investment. Are you investing more money into fertility to get similar or maybe greater results? What does that budget look like?
I guess what I found is I was far overapplying my nitrogen, and not just in my wheat, but in my corn too, in the pursuit of yield. And I guess I've taken those dollars and applied them more into my micronutrients or foliar feeding. So I'll still put my nitrogen up front to a certain degree, but then I'll allow Mother Nature and the year to dictate how much further I go with it. And that's where my tissue samples come into play.
One of the things that I cannot stand, everybody to this point, unless this is your first podcast episode that you've listened to or you've never heard me talk before, nitrogen, I absolutely believe on everything we're over applying nitrogen. And I know that what's typical wheat, because I don't even remember these numbers because they're so far out of left field that I cannot stand them. But what, like the typical wheat nitrogen recommendation is what,
2.4.
2.4. That's insane, man. You are not putting on 2.4 pounds of nitrogen per bushel of wheat produced, are you?
No. And that's, you know, and we kind of looked at that when we were going out, like, well, geez, we can't spread 500, 600 pounds of nitrogen or urea, you know, on and trying to pursue 100 bushel wheat. You know, it doesn't work. You know, and I know guys, we, you know, we've tried stuff like that, and it just throwing a lot out there and you're gonna lose a certain amount of it. So
Do you know where you're at right now?
not specifically, but I, you know, probably around the 1.8 maybe.
Yeah, I talked with a grower, and that's they're like, man, I can't believe you're doing that. I'm like, well, start there, like 1.8, 1.5 pounds, and then we'll work off of that. Because, like you said, it's a reallocation of those dollars, and I don't know what urea is doing in your neck of the woods, but it's probably still 55, 60 cents a unit, maybe. Even if it's, so let's say, even if it's 50 cents, right? And we pulled, you're talking 60 pounds ish, maybe more than that, maybe up to 100 pounds out of your nitrogen program for that wheat. Now, all of a sudden, you've got 30 to 50 bucks extra, not really extra, but that you can reallocate, that you pulled out of your nitrogen budget. And to do that in the way that you've done that, through the foliar feeding has been phenomenal. You've seen, significant increases, obviously, 10 plus percent increase in yield. But one of the things that I really wanted to touch on is protein content. There's some people I know that don't sell their wheat based off protein, but you have been able to benefit from that. So how has increased protein content helped your operation?
I think it's kind of regional, but in our area, a lot of times we might be on the verge of being short just a little bit protein in our wheat, maybe taking a slight deduction or hit in our per bushel. We've also had times where we've had a premium and a sizable premium for good protein wheat also. And since I've started doing this foliar application, and particularly where I see it is my late season, so it's, you know, early heading when I'm going out there anyway with my fungicide. Bring on a couple gallons of our nitrogen product. I really have never had a problem with low wheat, and usually I'm got a nice sizable cushion, and a lot of times receive some kind of premium. It's been nice for our area.
So not only are you increasing your yield, which pays the bills, pulling that across the scale, but now sometimes you're able to capitalize on a protein premium. Have you really seen a difference in, I'm just curious, I probably should have prefaced this before, but now I'm going to get a real candid answer. What about harvest moisture, or what about harvest ability in general? I suppose I'll say, since you've been doing it for 10 years now. Where have you seen your harvest ability from 10 years ago till now?
Well, you know, and a lot of times, especially in the summer, we're getting hot and dry anyway. So dry down in our area is not probably as big an issue in some of the intensive areas. When you're applying that late season nitrogen, it's gonna dry, you know, help dry things down in a hurry. And it really, and I guess kind of where what started this whole conversation with for myself was I was looking to plant spring wheat this year. I'm gonna go off a little bit here, but and so one of the varieties here in South Dakota that's really showing a lot of promise is struggles a bit in the nitrogen or protein arena. So you've really kind of got to address a way to handle that if you're going to plant that variety, but it has phenomenal yield. So I guess, you know, I'm looking at that, and that doesn't scare me to go after those varieties that sometimes struggle because I know I can address that protein with foliar applications I've done.
And what other things, like plant health? I know we talked about that a little bit. We've talked about that a little bit in the past. Not that you struggle greatly with, a bunch of smut and other leaf diseases that come in. I guess I'll ask it this way. Do you feel like your plant health has been consistent, if not better, using our system?
You know, I've been applying now for probably about 4 years using the sugar product just to kind of help the plant health and the microbial health. And even in sometimes when we've had some short wheat, you know, we might come in and apply like a growth stimulant product. And you know, and we don't have the typically the issues of tall wheat, so we can get away with, you know, stimulating that plant and getting that extra growth and using some of those products. So, and the other thing too is if a person's it, you know, their thing, we can raise a lot of extra straw without taking away from yield. And there's such a demand for straw the last few years that if a person had to, it's a way to generate extra dollars on your field just from the straw production.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I need to get into. You always find those little tiny, like 3 pound bales that they sell at, your Walmarts and your Hobby Lobbies and stuff. That's what we need to get into, dude, because they sell those things for like 10 bucks a whack. And, just for a couple pounds of a bale. That's where we really need to go. But Scott, as we, I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I've had a great conversation. I think this is something that we're probably going to have to continue down the road. What kind of final advice do you have for the listener that's tuning in, that's really intrigued about growing healthier, higher yielding, higher income producing wheat? What final advice do you have for that listener?
Well, I mean, I think it's like you said about being kind of the stepchild. I mean, there's a chance to look at wheat or some other small grain in your rotation, whether it's oats or spring wheat, barley, whatever it might be in your area. And that crop rotation really, really gives you an advantage, especially in maybe a drier year or things like that. But I think instead of looking at wheat as our stepchild, if you intensively manage wheat like you would your corn crop, there's a lot of potential out there that. And a lot of times we just look at crop wheat as our off year. We don't put much out there. But if a person changes their thought, puts the same effort into wheat, they might be extremely surprised at what you could do as a short season crop.
That's great advice, man. I really appreciate that. And I thank you very much for spending time with me today. I know that your time is valuable, and every time we get to do these interviews and stuff, it is a joy of my life. It's something that I would do every single hour of the day. And I know that now that I say that and Karen and Rod hear this, that's probably what they're going to go to. I'll spend every single hour of my day interviewing people, which would be absolutely fine. That was a phenomenal story. And thank you very much for coming on and sharing, Scott. I really appreciate it. And as always, we hope that you have a better day.
You're listening on the Verbal Crowd Network. Find more great shows at verbalcrowd.com.